Good evening. Good evening, and thank you for joining me at this telephone town hall meeting. I'm your state representative, John Marr. I very much appreciate your taking time out of your evening to join me. I've got 60,000 bosses, and getting the input from you is so important. I do really welcome your participation. And to remind you, if you've got a comment or a question, just hit star 3, and it'll put you in the queue, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to everybody who chooses to offer some thoughts or questions. In the meantime, while we're waiting for the first to show up, let me mention something important that happened this week. This week, the first cut at the state budget was considered by the State House, and there were two basic versions. One built upon the budget as existed last year. On an overview for the state budget, the general fund is just shy of $30 billion. Of that $30 billion, 40% of it goes to education, about $12.1 billion between K-12 and higher ed, and another just shy of 40% goes to what's now called human services. This is those categories that until recently were referred to as welfare. That amounts to about $11.5 billion. And the third largest driver of the cost in the state is for corrections, probation, drug and alcohol programs. This prisons at $2.25 billion, or about 7.5% of the budget. So once those three areas of the budget are considered, they total 90% of the general fund. Everything else is dealt with in that remaining 10% of the general fund. So I hope that helps you with an overview of the structure of the budget. The two proposals that were the principal things considered this week was a budget based upon state revenues and state tax collections as they now exist. And the second one was based upon Governor Wolf's proposal. Governor Wolf has emphasized repeatedly that he wanted his proposal to be considered in its entirety as a whole, not to be considered piece by piece. That is, not to consider his sales tax increase of $3.6 billion separately from the rest, not to consider his income tax increase separately from the rest, not to consider his severance tax proposal separately from the rest. And out of respect to the governor, his plan in its entirety was presented to the House of Representatives. And I was surprised to discover that not one single member of the House, not a Republican, not a Democrat, not one single member of the House supported the Wolf plan this week. So we are now proceeding with the budget discussions. The budget as adopted in the House is really a working document. It's the template for all the discussions that will happen between now and hopefully June 30th we'll have a budget adopted. That's our goal in the House of Representatives. It's our goal under the Constitution. It's a goal that we've met each of the past 4 years. It was missed the 8 prior years. I'm not proud of that. But it was accomplished during the Ridge and Schweiker years every single time. So I'm hopeful maybe we can do that, and we'll see. It now goes on to the Senate and the conversations between the Senate and the House and the governor in the weeks ahead will be very important in terms of shaping the state spending and taxing plan for the year ahead. I'll remind you, if you've got a comment or a question, just touch star 3 and you'll be able to join in the conversation. Some of the other things that are underway this year, and an area where I've gotten more encouragement over more years than any other, deals with liquor store privatization. The House of Representatives passed a liquor privatization bill 2 years ago and sent it to the Senate, where it did not succeed in garnering the 26 votes it needed to get to the governor's desk and become law. Again this year, the House has passed a liquor privatization plan and has sent it to the Senate, and we're waiting to see if there's a different appetite in the Senate this time. I think there probably is. Now, I will mention that we have our first caller, our first participant who's asking to speak about mental health issues, and I'm going to connect with Matt from Upper St. Clair and remind others, if you wish to join the conversation, touch star 3 and we'll get you in line. So, Matt, you're on the air.
Yes, I have two questions, Representative. The first is that there is a proposal being whooped through the legislature for medical marijuana. I have had extended conversation with the chief executive assistant to Senator Smith, and he has confirmed that there are no protections or standards in that legislation with regard to the quality, such as, for example, that you have to prove that it's effective and not harmful, the standards about what the medications, so-called, are going to be, that there is a hidden 6% tax on so-called medical marijuana, and I'm interested in that. And then the other question, there is legislation under consideration in the Senate which is going to allow assisted suicide. I have read the bill. There are no protections, and every psychiatrist consulted knows that over 90% of the people that commit suicide are severely depressed.
Matt, thank
you
so
much. I'd like your reviews with regard to those two things. Thank you.
I very much appreciate your questions. And with respect to medical marijuana, the plan which the Senate advanced so far is pretty broad, and it really allows prescriptive authority from all sorts of individuals who ordinarily do not have the ability to prescribe any kind of medication. My big picture view of medical marijuana is that if a doctor believes that a particular treatment is in the best interest of a patient, then I don't want government standing between the doctor and the patient. However, I don't want others prescribing such things, and it must be in a form which is specific and to the problem and controlled. Those features are not in the Senate bill, and I don't think it's going to receive a very welcome reception in the House in its current form. I do expect that the conversations will continue for a very, very narrow, perhaps trial operation, but again, limiting it to medical doctors prescribing for specific purposes. But you're right, there's not a lot of medical research. There's a lot of anecdotal history, but not a lot of medical research on the question. With respect to assisted suicide, the bill that's been introduced in the Senate, I think, has very, very little chance of moving forward. It is, as Matt observed, really just it has no thresholds that I think anybody would be comfortable with, and maybe is going serves to take advantage of those who are in a depressed state. So we're moving on to our next call, who is Laurel from Bethel Park. Laurel?
Yeah.
How are you? Thanks for joining the conversation.
I'm happy to talk to somebody at your level.
You're one of my bosses, Laurel, so I've got 60,000 of them, but you are one of them.
I'm calling because I'll just give you a little bit of history real quick. I have a child with mental illness. He has autism and schizophrenia. He's 32 now. So, obviously, I've been through the gamut.
God bless you.
And I've fought for him all along the way. And it isn't easy, because the government system is set up in such a way that you have to fight for what you get.
You do.
You have to fight.
You're absolutely right.
And it's still that way. Unfortunately, right now, the pendulum is swung way the wrong way, in my opinion, because they've closed the Mayview. They've put all the people who really need that kind of help out into group homes. And then into the more restrict, they have more restrictive type of group homes. And then they've moved the ones who are a little bit less into the group homes that are in the community. And then they've moved the people who they think can maybe do apartment living. And it's not going to work.
Well, Laurel, I very much thank you for bringing this subject to the discussion today. The fact is that a generation ago, we had a significant number of facilities for residential circumstances that were sizable on campuses, and in fact, one down at what we now know as South Point. The federal courts, inch by inch, issued rulings saying that it was a deprivation of civil rights for those with disabilities to be confined in such premises, and which led to the expansion of community-based housing. Personally, I think that there are many folks who were in those institutions who can actually benefit from being in the community. There's no doubt about that. But there is a certain percentage, a small percentage, for whom that is not the right answer. And you are correct. We haven't found exactly the right answer on that yet. I can tell you from looking at the scroll of calls here, there are some others. You've piqued a nerve, and there's some others who've got thoughts on this. So I'm going to continue on to the next call and welcome Marcia from Upper St. Clair. And Marcia, I'll be honest and say, I think we know one another.
We do, Representative, and I just want to say in front of your constituents how much I admire all the work that you have done on behalf of people with disabilities over these many, many years. You're one of our champions, sir.
Thank you, Marcia.
My question's a little different, and it more involves people with intellectual and other developmental disabilities, autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome. We have waiting lists all over the Commonwealth. And the House proposal on the budget, which I realize is just a preliminary, you know, let's get started with the discussion,
right.
Flat levels almost all of the supports for people with lifelong developmental disabilities. We had, of course, we have been working very hard. The Corbett administration has done did a wonderful job in helping to decrease those waiting lists.
Yes.
So we had people, for instance, who came into supports last year.
And I think you'd agree with the prior caller. You'd agree with the prior caller that folks have got to, unfortunately, fight for these sorts of benefits at this point.
Yeah. Right now, the House proposal, of course, everything's flatlined. That would not even allow those who came into supports last year the necessary annualization to remain in supports. Do you think there's going to be some movement on this, Representative?
Marcia, I really do believe that there will be movement on this. This House budget that was adopted this week was really the fork in the road between a budget based upon existing resources and the governor's proposal overall. And there's a lot of space in between. To give callers an idea of how much space is in between those two points, the governor's proposed budget is about $4.5 billion more than what was spent last year of the general fund. Millions and billions are numbers that get tossed around a lot. So just, I'm an accountant, I'm a CPA, and I like to put numbers in perspective. To give folks some idea that of the difference between a million and a billion, consider this. Let's think about minutes. And by the way, while we're thinking of numbers, remember *3 if you'd like to join the conversation, you have a comment or a question. Keep that in mind. But 1,000 minutes ago, it's just about 16 hours. We can all remember where we were at 1:30 this morning, and I'll bet most of the people on this call were asleep or just fading off to the late-night television. But we can remember 1,000 minutes ago. 100,000 minutes ago is just about 2 months. It was just about the last week of March. And if you look at your calendar, you know what you were doing 100,000 minutes ago. A million minutes ago is something less than 2 years. In fact, it would have been precisely July 9th of 2013. And if you look back at your calendar, you have a pretty good idea what you were doing then. So a million minutes ago, we can all remember what we were doing. A billion minutes ago, none of us can remember because it was almost 2 millennia ago, almost 2,000 years ago. That is the order of magnitude, the difference between millions and billions. And when we have these state conversations about budgets, too often those numbers sound like they mush together. But the governor is asking for an increase of something in the neighborhood of $4 billion increase, which for is about $368 per Pennsylvanian. But recognizing that a lot of Pennsylvanians are children and are those that have retired, it's in excess of $1,000 per Pennsylvania taxpayer. It's a lot of money. So we've got to sort out where what is the right number. And I completely agree with Marcia that when we have folks with lifelong developmental disabilities, that to have waiting lists for those services is only inviting trouble, and trouble that will actually cost more than if we provided the right services to begin with. So, Marcia, you can count on me again. I've been there fighting against the waiting list for many years, and I will continue to do that. Our next caller is Sari from McMurray. Sari?
Well, hi. How are you tonight?
Very well, thank you.
I do have a special needs daughter, but that wasn't my question. My question is, are they always looking for ways to have money? I was really surprised that 40% of this budget goes towards welfare.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are surprised by that. And if there are others that are surprised, feel free to hit *3 and join the conversation. But go ahead, Sari.
My question is, now for work, I have to be drug tested. Other states, I understand, will drug test recipients of welfare. Why can't we have a program like that? And then lot of that money can be distributed for my – I have a little girl with Down syndrome. I say little girl, she's 26 years old.
Aww.
And she is falling into this category of she has services, but not nearly enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Sari, and that it is a good segue. It's important to understand, and again, I'll remind people, *3, but to join the conversation, it's important to understand that when we use this term welfare or human services, part of it is for what we think of traditionally as money given out to folks that go and use it in the grocery store for one reason or another. But a significant part of it goes to Medicaid, and particularly nursing home care for our elderly neighbors. And anybody who's had experience with nursing homes understands that for most families, it's not a question of if, it's only a question of when the personal resources get exhausted. So. But drug testing has been expanded under Republicans, but we certainly need to keep considering ensuring that those who are claiming benefits and are able to work are not diminishing the resources available for folks like your daughter, Sari. Now we're going to Antoinette in Bethel Park. Antoinette?
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm delighted you're joining the call. What's your thought tonight?
Okay, my thought is on a completely different vein. This is about the smart meters that are required to go into all of our homes. Act 129, 2008. And they said, since the Pennsylvania legislature, it said at least in the reporting in the newspaper, it hasn't studied the cost of the benefits, they said it's going to be very detrimental. Why do we have to do this? Is there a way out of this?
That's a very interesting question, Antoinette. Actually, I was one of just three members of the House of Representatives who voted against Act 29 of 2008. The reason I voted against it is that I believe that if the benefits of the smart meters are that clearly in favor of the consumers, that consumers would be very happy to volunteer for them. I would go so far as to say that if the utilities wanted to have an opt-out opportunity where these would be installed with consumers unless the consumer objected, that would be fine too. But to mandate that we have any sort of device in our homes that isn't of our own choosing just doesn't seem right to me. And if these devices are terrific, and for instance, I have a thermostat I installed in my own home that I can control from a distance so that when I'm driving back home from the Capitol, I can turn on the heater, I can turn on the air conditioning, but it doesn't have to run when I'm not there. And so that's a smart thermometer, a thermostat, and I suppose a smart meter could have certain benefits too, but I really think it ought to be left up to the individuals. Next joining us is John from Bethel Park, and I think, John, I think I know who you are.
Hello, neighbor.
How are you? Thanks for joining us, and I'll remind those listening, star 3 to join the conversation.
Absolutely, and I encourage people, as you do, to join the conversation. If you're silent, your voice is obviously never heard. I wanted to call and thank you, first of all, for not supporting House Bill 504. And I'll let you explain to the listeners in detail. But, you know, I read all 43 pages of that, and I was kind of amazed that anybody voted for it. It's flim-flam of the highest order. From what I was able to read in 43 pages, I'll still get my $250 property tax rebate because I'm over 65, but I'll also get to pay more sales taxes on more items. And if I decide to go back into the workforce, I'll get to pay more wage tax. And there's no real property tax relief or school property tax relief in House Bill 504. And again, I want to thank you for not supporting that one.
Well, thank you, John. And I'll explain the reason I did not, and I'll explain what the bill is for those who may not be familiar with it. There was a proposal that came through the House a couple of weeks ago and did pass in the House that would increase the income tax by 1% and increase the sales tax by 1%. And all those funds would be rolled together and then sent out in the same fashion as other so-called property tax relief. Now, you may remember from the days of the gaming law when that was supposed to reduce your property tax bills by half, and I said, no, it's not. I predicted it would amount to about $100 to $115 per home in our district, and 10 years later, it turns out I was right. I guess it's good to be an accountant. But in this case, this plan would probably reduce the property taxes for people in Bethel Park, Upper St. Clair, and Peters Township by about $400 per home. But in exchange for that $400 per home, you would be paying income tax and sales tax at a higher rate. And the amount that would flow out of our communities compared to the amount that would come back was enormously disproportionate. And it would be further subsidization of the rest of the state out of our three neighborhoods. And I didn't think that was right. I also didn't think it was right that it would shift taxes from corporate owners, such as the folks that own the South Hills Village Mall, would get a property tax break that would be made up for by individuals paying income taxes and sales taxes. I haven't heard anybody rallying to reduce property taxes on commercial properties, but that would have been the effect, and the burden would have shifted from the commercial enterprises onto the backs of individual taxpayers, and I wasn't going to support it. Next, we're going to Cheryl from Peters Township. Cheryl?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Star 3 for anybody else who wants to join the conversation.
I was just wondering, it just seems like our Ohio neighbors are doing a lot of things right to draw businesses to them. And it just seems like maybe our new governor might have a different point of view that might not be as conducive, and it concerns me. So I was kind of hoping that the Congress was going to be able to do something to balance that effect out, to help keep businesses wanting to come to Pennsylvania instead of leaving. I have two children that are in college getting ready to graduate, and I'd kind of like them to stay in the area instead of having to move to another state to find, you know, work. So,
for a couple of decades, Cheryl, you no doubt know that we saw a migration of folks from Western Pennsylvania, and something that TV networks have never quite figured out is the reason there's so many Steeler fans at every away game isn't so much that people are traveling there,
exactly,
is that they move there.
Exactly.
And I'd rather keep the Steeler fans here at home and bring in new Steeler fans. So
I agree.
One of the things that's a big difference between what the Republicans are trying to do now and what the governor wants to do is that the governor seems to start with a proposition that somehow or another businesses are a burden on the state. And I start with the proposition that businesses create jobs. I cannot tell you how many neighbors have told me about how happy they are that their son or their daughter or their in-laws have been able to move back to the area because of jobs that are directly or indirectly connected to this energy boom that's underway in Pennsylvania. And the governor's proposed severance tax, although he characterizes it as a 5% tax, actually, because it's got funny math behind it, amounts to about a 20 to 25% tax. And I could tell you, well, I don't have to tell you, you probably know people that have already been laid off because these companies don't like the uncertainty. They're not waiting to see what happens in Harrisburg. They're not in the business of politics. They're in the business of translating energy into products and services and jobs. And it, the uncertainty that we have is causing them to make decisions about the deployment of capital. And I can tell you, I've met carpenters, I've met fitters, I've met folks in all sorts of allied businesses who are losing their jobs because these companies are not waiting around to wait for the other shoe to drop. And we need to straighten this out and straighten this out quickly so that these companies can have the certainty that Pennsylvania is a place where they want to do business. Because we had an influx of population in recent years. And just the other day, we saw the census report in the first quarter of this year. Guess what? People are starting to leave again. And I don't like that. And I don't want to let that continue. And that, so that's a pretty big question, a pretty big answer. And since we were talking about the Steelers, I see that Sam from Peters has a comment about athletes being overpaid. So, Sam, you are on the air.
First of all, I want to thank you. I think you do a great job, and we need more politicians like you.
Thank you, Sam.
My problem is this. Our athletes and our entertainers are so overly paid in this country, and we had doctors who spend their dedicated life to helping people badly underpaid in comparison as to what's going on. And if this keeps going on, we're not going to have American doctors because they can't afford to go to college with a cost and then practice and make so much less money than our overpaid athletes. Somebody better straighten this country out. I'm 85 years old, and I lived in a great America. I lived in a land of opportunity and small business. And I know you are a champion of that, and we need more people like you. Let's take care of our medical people. My wife has Parkinson's, and I know what it's through. They're dedicated to her so badly that, overtime they work to help her to improve her life. And it just breaks my heart when I know that they are badly underpaid.
Well, Sam, I really am sorry about your wife, and I'm glad that she's got a team of people that dedicated. And I thank you for joining the call tonight. The sad fact is that the governor believes that doctors should be paid even less by the state Medicaid program. And he has offered a plan which would actually decrease the amount that doctors get paid and that others that provide services, that hospitals and nursing homes, and how these folks can continue to provide services when they're being paid less and less, I don't get. And I think it really is creating a problem when we realize that our population in Western Pennsylvania, because of the exodus of so many young people over the last couple of decades, we skew towards being one of the older populations in the country. And we have some of the best health care in the world right on our doorstep. And for the state to disrespect that wealth of medical research and the medical profession in our backyard, it doesn't make much sense. And it really ties in with what Marcia was talking about earlier, that a little bit more money in these areas goes a long, long way. So on to CJ from Bethel Park. CJ.
Hello?
Yes, CJ.
Yeah, actually,
this is Representative John Maher.
Yes. My question was actually, I think you almost answered half of it earlier. I was asking about your views on welfare reform and, getting some of the people who obviously, obviously there's some people on it who need it, but there's a lot that abuse the system and are able to work and get out there and just, rack up the welfare checks instead or use the public housing when it could be used, in better ways and that money could be used in better ways.
Well, I agree with you that the state has a duty. I think none of us would regret helping our neighbors who are actually in a desperate situation. We're charitable folks in Western PA, and we understand that tough times can occur to anybody in any household. At the same time, The integrity of these programs depends upon benefits going to those who actually deserve and require them. I was disappointed earlier this year when the governor eliminated by executive order all asset testing for welfare payments. So theoretically, someone who's got $5 million and has decided that they don't want to work anymore, they may be able to qualify for welfare payments, which is ludicrous. And I don't know, I'm not going to pick a number tonight and say it should be this number or that number, but we could all agree that there's some threshold beyond which it shouldn't be up to taxpayers to be writing checks to those who've got enormous personal wealth. And just because that circumstance can exist causes people to be very skeptical about those that receive these benefits who really need and deserve them. And we would eliminate so much of the stigma of benefits if we police them better, and we would have more resources available for those who really need the resources if we police them better rather than less. Now we're going to Sam in McMurray. Sam?
Yes, John. Thanks for taking my call. I have two quick questions. The legislature has passed a law that townships and school boards cannot raise taxes above rate of inflation, but every year they get an exemption. These school boards are out of control. Also, the legislature is trying to downsize. Why can't we have one representative for each county in the state? Why do we need, what is it, 263 people or something?
Yeah, 203 in the House and 50 in the Senate.
Okay. Now, it's been going on for years and years,
yeah,
and all the public wants this reduced. Why can't that happen?
Well, you know, that's been one of those head-scratchers for me across the years. I have long favored reducing the size of the legislature. The size of the legislature goes back to an era when we had no electronic communications. We didn't even have fax machines. And telephones were so darn expensive that the ability for folks to be within arm's reach meant so very much. But as we see tonight, I'm in the Capitol talking to you in your home, and technology allows us to make the world a smaller place. As to your idea about having one legislator per county, back in the old days, there used to be the number of legislators was determined by a certain number per county, and the U.S. Supreme Court determined this violated one man, one vote principle, and therefore could not go forward. At the same time, I voted now every opportunity to reduce the size of the legislature, which will take a constitutional amendment, and the House already this year passed constitutional amendments to reduce the size of the House and the Senate, and it sent them over to the Senate. That's happened before. It hasn't gotten done, and I'm not terribly optimistic it's going to get done this time. But I really do appreciate your taking the time to call. And remember,
thank you, John.
Hey, take care, Sam. And remember, if you have a comment or a question you'd like to join the conversation, just touch *3, and I want to express my appreciation to those who have the patience to be hanging on the line, and we're going to get to everybody if we can. So hang in there. Now we're going to Janet from Bethel Park. Janet?
Hi. I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, you were talking about how people get around. Somebody was talking about how people get around. Why the people who really need it, who are disabled, like myself, who can't get access and stuff, and they tell you, like I've had people at Access tell me, oh, well, you can use public transportation. You can do this, you can do that. Well, no, because my disability never changes. And they keep it up and keep it up. And I was wondering if there was anything that we could, like the legislator or somebody could do something about that?
Well, Janet, what I would suggest is that tomorrow, go ahead and call the local district office, which is 412 831-8080. And the terrific folks that work there will do what they can to check about your applicability vis-a-vis the Access Program. The Access Program has had a substantial increase in funding this year as a result of the expansion of the transportation funding that was passed in 2014. Now we're going to Lynn from Bethel Park. Lynn?
Hello, Representative.
How are you?
Pretty good. My 80th birthday is on Saturday.
Well, do you want me to sing Happy Birthday?
No.
No, we probably don't have enough time for that. Remind others, if you'd like to join the conversation, *3. Well, Lynn, happy birthday in advance.
Thank you. I want to go back to the first caller's questions. I have numerous chronic conditions, and I take a lot of pills for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if the restrictions on marijuana use are written, I wonder whether it could replace so many pills for people with chronic illnesses.
And I wonder the same thing, Lynn, and my view is if your doctor believes that that is the right answer for you as his patient, then I don't have medical training, and I'm going to trust your doctor, and I want your doctor to be able to make those decisions. But I don't want it to be left up to other people that aren't doctors to be making those decisions. And you probably wouldn't take your medicines if they were prescribed by people who weren't doctors either, would you?
Well, the legislature prescribes a good bit.
Well, you're right. Too much. Too much. Let doctors be doctors. Do you agree with that?
Yes. And I'm also interested in what the legislature is going to do about assisted suicide. I have no desire to be assisted into suicide right now. I have a wonderful family.
Well, again, we talked about this a little bit earlier, and there is a bill that's in the Senate that deals with assisted suicide that at this point in time is so broadly written that I really think it would put folks with depression or temporary moments of unhappiness at high risk. It is certainly a subject that is evolving. And I think the way that it's evolving is that doctors and families and patients are really sorting it out very quietly, individual by individual. I would like doctors to have more protection when they sort out those things, but when they're doing it with the best interest of the patient and the patient's wishes and the family's wishes in mind, again, I don't want to get between the doctor and the patient, but I think it's a very slippery slope when the state starts saying what steps should be taken to terminate life. And I think we have to be exceptionally careful about that because we've seen so many well-intended ideas in so many different areas over the years start off as simple legislation that then gets out of control. But I wish you happy birthday, Lynn, and I'll remind everybody else, *3 if you want to join the call. Charles from McMurray. Charles?
Oh, thank you for having me on the program tonight. I have a question.
Thank you.
Regarding the inheritance tax. Ohio has just repealed its inheritance tax, and I was hoping there might be plans in the state of Pennsylvania to do the same thing.
Well, we've had some progress on that in the last couple of years. 2 years ago, we eliminated the inheritance tax with respect to family farms. Now, that doesn't affect too many families in Peters Township and fewer in Upper St. Clair and Bethel Park, but the logic that applied there is contagious. The logic is that families shouldn't have to sell a family farm in order to pass it on from one generation to the next. Last year, we took that further and expanded the protection on inheritance tax to family businesses. But I think you're absolutely right that we shouldn't discourage and punish lifelong residents of Pennsylvania from ending and continuing their lives in Pennsylvania to the very end. So I do thank you for calling, and I've supported every effort to eliminate what I call the death tax. And again, Charles, thanks for the call. I'll remind everybody else, *3 to join the conversation, offer your comments, or ask a question. We're going to Ron in Bethel Park. Ron?
Hey, how you doing, Representative Moore? Thanks for coming to our council meetings.
I'm always happy to be there.
You don't always have to bring money. Just show up once in a while and say hello. Okay?
Well, I appreciate that you modified the invitation that way, Ron. Thank you.
Okay, well, what I'm thinking about is I'm a senior citizen. Okay, I'll be 66 soon. The wife will, she's over 65 also. Our home's paid for, and I mean, we don't have a great big house in Bethel Park. We can't afford a Cadillac or a Lexus. We don't even want stuff like that, okay? And we have a young son, 23, but he still lives at home, and that's wonderful. But the thing I'm calling about is, you know, if the governor's stuff goes through about, like, property taxes being reduced, okay, like I think you said, $450 for the average, but, I mean, I make enough money retired to pay the $450 that would be reduced. Now I was thinking about these other people, senior citizens that live somewhere else, like in these high rises and places like that. And I'm adding something on to it, what I told someone before about the young people. You know that if they rent, these landlords, they're not going to drop their rent on. So you know it's not just the idea what the governor's proposal was. I'm thinking, you know, I don't know a lot about how I spell this and how I spell that. But the thing of it is you know, if I don't need a tax reduction, I can live with it. You know what I mean? But I don't. There's other senior citizens that might need it, but also there's probably a lot more younger people who need that tax reduction.
Well, one of the challenges, Ron, with the conversation about property tax relief has always been, are we actually directing property tax relief to the folks that really need it, as opposed to just getting it confused? And you raise a very good point that the governor's proposal would serve to reduce taxes on commercial properties and shift those taxes onto the backs of individual taxpayers. And something else, you might not need that $450 a year tax decrease, and I appreciate you standing up and saying that you can get by without it. But the flip side, the joker in the pack with this plan, is that if your family were to need nursing home care or home health care, those would be subject to sales tax. And a 6% sales tax on a $6,000 a month nursing home bill is just a brutal punishment to those that require long-term care, and I can never support that.
All right. Can I just make one final statement?
Yes, Ron.
Okay. I'm not going to ask you to stay on the phone who you'd vote for president, but I'm going to say what I would do.
Well, we're not going to be political tonight. This is strictly government. This isn't politics. Another night we might do politics.
You're going to trump me. Okay.
I'm sorry. No, I wish we could have a conversation, but I have a bright line between the legislative activity and political activity, so
okay,
I do appreciate it.
All right, so what I do appreciate about you is actually, you know, doing the information to whoever wants to really listen. And I think it's very important that, you know, when you put your calls out there, people should pick up that phone and express their opinion.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'll remind others that *3 if you want to join the conversation. And we're now going to Sue from Peters Township. Sue?
Yes, hello, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. My question, what are you trying to do to close the gap for services for, like, children with disabilities? Once they hit 21 to, like, 62, there's really no services?
We've actually talked about this subject a few times already on the call, and I have been working to expand those services because you're right. We're pretty darn good about getting services to children at this time who've got disabilities, but the state's got a long way to go. That once these children become adults, there's not sufficient resources, and frankly, I believe it costs more money to not provide the resources than it would to provide the resources so that those with disabilities can be out supporting themselves to the extent that they're able in the community and being full citizens in the community.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I guess my experience is I have a child with disabilities, and we've really never been able to access good care services because we don't fit the criteria. So in my medical assistance, people did not want to take because it did not reimburse well enough. So a lot of it came out of the primary insurance and my paying out of pocket for services. So there's a huge need. And as you know, my child ages out of services shortly, it's going to be a bigger problem because we aren't hooked up now. We're not going to be till things get worse.
And I'm glad, I'm happy to hear you reinforce this message because it's one of those areas where we have a genuine need and it's there isn't a great big protest for this sort of thing. During the Ridge and Schweiker years, we had great expansion in this area. Corbett tried to expand it a bit, but we have so much more to do, and it really pays for itself. And not just in dollars and cents, but it pays for itself and the happiness of the families that are involved and the peace of mind of the families involved. So going to Ray from Upper St. Clair. How are you, Ray?
Thank you, great.
For calling in. And remember, *3 for anybody else who wishes to join the conversation.
First of all, I want to thank you for taking my call, and I want to thank you for the job you do in the state legislature. I'm a big supporter of yours.
Thank you, Ray. I very much appreciate it.
I have a couple of questions. One is, what can we do? What can the legislature do? Now, I was very encouraged by the increase in the Republican majority in the Senate and strong Republican majority in the House. I feel we need to not let Governor Wolf take all the legislative leadership. And I would like, can you give us a quick update on what happened? Where are we on putting a bill about liquor and wine reform in front of the governor, even if he has to veto it? I think that's probably, which if he does, that's, let's get him on the line on that. Welfare reform, which is probably the biggest cost item for all the state, or for, excuse me, for all the school districts. And the third one is the proposals for trying to stop the state from collecting union dues for the unions, which then get contributed to the union's political candidates.
Well, you give me a lot to talk about, Ray, and I'll try to get it all done in just a couple of minutes. The first aspect is, or I'll cover is the last aspect, which is, it is correct that right now state and local governments collect political money from employee paychecks and turn it over to PACs and so forth connected with connection with the political action committees. I personally believe that government should not be collecting political money for anyone. Back in the old days, you'd hear stories, and it's not too long ago, decades ago, of different county courthouses where employees would get paid in cash and then walk across the street and have to contribute a certain amount of their paycheck to whoever the local political godfather was. And we called that macing, and we thought that was – everybody got to the point they realized that was wrong, and it was outlawed. I don't believe the government should be collecting political funds for anyone. Some will say, well, it doesn't cost that much to collect them. That's not the point. The point is government should be separate from politics, just like we were talking about a couple of minutes ago, and I think that's very important. With respect to liquor, liquor and wine sales, I don't believe the state should be in the business of selling liquor and wine. I had somebody actually who was a Bulgarian ambassador tell me that the Russians had always admired our state store system because it exemplified the communist model of central control they had always aim for. And ironically, he noted that the Bulgarians have been unable to get their wines into the Pennsylvania liquor stores. I think it's time to get past the Soviet model of how to distribute consumer goods. And the state, the House of Representatives has now twice passed privatization bills that have gone to the Senate. I'm hopeful this year the Senate will take it up. And on welfare reform, we've talked about that a fair bit tonight. And so I'm actually just going to go on to our next caller, who is Perry from Bethel Park. Perry, welcome aboard. Thank you for taking time to share your thoughts.
Thank you for taking my call. My question has to do with something that you talked about before, young people leaving the state. Where I work in South Point. I work for an engineering layoff in our department.
Perry, you're fading out. Can you?
Okay. Can you hear me better?
I can hear you better. Thank you.
We had a layoff this week, and I noticed on our bulletin board, one of our large customers said that steel dumping that decimated the steel industry in the 80s is rising, and it's very bad in the last year, risen. So are you aware of that? Is there any?
I am aware of that, and I know that Congressman Murphy has been directing a lot of attention to trying to get President Obama to enforce the treaties that prohibit the steel dumping, where steel is being shipped to America and other parts of the world at below the cost of manufacturing, principally from China. It is not, unfortunately, not a state issue. The state doesn't get involved in foreign trade, but I know that Congressman Murphy has been a leading voice on the thing. I'm very sorry to hear about the layoffs at your company. And I'm guessing some of those layoffs, most of the engineering companies in South Point have a fair amount of business with respect to, directly or indirectly, the Marcellus boom. Is your firm one of those?
We did for a while, and it faded away, like you said.
It faded away. And
these companies are afraid of the taxes.
Exactly. And I'm sorry that your company is one of them, but it's happening throughout our area, and every one of us is going to have neighbors and family members that are losing jobs because this administration has held up a not wanted, not welcome sign to the energy industry, and they're not waiting to see what happens in terms of the big budget battle ahead. They're just packing up and moving on, and that is a tragic, tragic shame. And those of us that can remember what happened when the steel industry folded up 30 years ago certainly don't want to see this booming hope destroyed in the course of a couple of years because of somebody playing politics.
I worked for Michael Baker for 7 years, and I lost that position that I started was the airports. I mean, the same thing there. They taxed major carriage at the hub that was here is because of the taxes.
Well, and thank you for offering that example as well, Perry. And you know, there's an old adage: if you want less of something, tax it, and you'll have less of it. And in this case, we're going to have less jobs. And we're having less jobs just because of the talk of the tax. So now we're going to Robert in Peters Township. Robert?
Representative Maher, it's a pleasure to speak with you this evening. I thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
Listening to some of your comments, just the one most recently, you're speaking of taxes and the decline in the Marcellus shale industry. Layoffs and so forth. I totally disagree with your comments on that. I think nobody knew what would happen, the end result with Marcellus shale development. I think there was just a perfect storm that hit us. It wasn't because of the proposed taxes. It was simply economics in the case of supply and demand.
So you think that the fact that drilling permit requests in Pennsylvania have declined by more than half, but that's not the case in West Virginia and Ohio, You think that could that be, West Virginia and Ohio have different overall economics than we do?
No, sir. I think everybody has the same economics. I think
then why is it hitting us harder?
Well, because I think we have more acreage here. I mean, the Marcellus Shale most definitely is prevalent in Pennsylvania, much more so than West Virginia. And Ohio, eastern Ohio, there are wells. But southwestern Pennsylvania is the heart of the Marcellus Shale industry, and that's why it's hurt us. It's the economics of the whole thing. It has nothing to do with the proposed taxes on the Marcellus Shale industry. I think that ought to be perfectly clear to your listeners.
Well, why, help me understand why you think that. I don't, and I'm open to being educated, so help me understand that.
Well, okay, so the reduction in commodity prices, especially oil, that we've witnessed in the past year, why do you think the oil went down to $40 a barrel?
The oil went down to $40 a barrel because we were producing so much natural gas here in Pennsylvania that it had a worldwide effect that caused the Saudis to decide that OPEC couldn't hold the fort anymore. And they abandoned it, and they let the prices drop, which is a compliment to our success of being energy independent. For the first time, we were exporting more energy than we were importing, and it was a wonderful moment in time for our country, and I want that moment to be preserved. I don't want to punish the companies that caused our electric bills to go down, to cause our gas pump prices to go down. I don't want to punish them and run them out of the state.
Yeah, but for you to say, or to lead your listeners to believe that because of this proposed tax on Marcellus Shale has led to the decline of the Marcellus, the layoffs here locally in Marcellus Shale in the tri-state area, is totally bogus.
Did you not hear the previous caller who said that at his company there were layoffs, and one of the reasons for the layoffs is because of the decline in the Marcellus because of their moving their assets because of the tax?
Well, that
their caller was just before you said this was experience.
That doesn't mean that he's correct. That doesn't mean that he's correct. There's overproduction. There's overcapacity. It's a case of supply and demand. I think people have to understand that.
And that's what I'm asking is, why do you think that Pennsylvania is suffering a decline far greater than Ohio and West Virginia?
I just mentioned that to you
we have more.
Oh, there's most definitely. We produce more gas in Ohio and West Virginia. There's no question about that.
I really appreciate you taking the time to call in, but I don't think we're going to persuade one another. But I do welcome your point of view, and I thank you for taking the time to call. Now we're going on to Wesley Hurst from Bethel Park, who is, I think, going to be our final caller here, Wesley. And we just have a minute or so if you would, please share your thought.
Well, my comments have to do with the people that called, and they have problems with their health, and they're not getting coverage from governmental sources. My wife suffered a long-term disability and required nursing care for over a year. And the current nursing rate around here is about $9,000, a little over $9,000 a month. So it wasn't too long before I saw over $100,000 in my billing.
Oh, my Lord.
But that's pretty common.
It is common. I mean, and Wesley, I hate to say this, but we're at 7 p.m. The satellite shuts down, and I've got to say good night, and I do thank you for calling. That's $9,000 a month, $100,000, and on top of that, Governor Wolf wants to tax you $6,000 on that. Do me a favor, though. Please call my office, 412-831-8080 tomorrow. And again, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to join this town meeting this evening, and it was an experiment, and I think it went pretty darn well, and I really want to thank you all for taking time to offer your thoughts. You're one of my 60,000 bosses, and I can't do this job without your input. So this is John Marr saying good night.